Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Welcome back to Blunt Business. Thank you for joining me here on the program. Once again on CannabisRio.com. And also, you can find the show distributed and made available on all major podcast platforms. YouTube Music, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. I wanted to change the order today. And also CannabisRio.com and the CannabisRadio.com app. Go ahead and look for all those right there. And I'm happy to go ahead and announce that Blunt Business has a presenting sponsor, the Buzz CRM. So offering 500 marketing tools in one platform, providing businesses with everything they need to manage, automate, and optimize marketing efforts. You can find out more and get yourself a free trial at thebuzzcrm.com, thebuzzcrm.com. My next guest is a financial whiz. We talked to him previously at Benzinga Miami 2024. As we know, expansive experience when it comes to working in companies like JP Morgan, named by Dealmaker Magazine, top 40 under 40 on Wall Street, and has led numerous initial public offerings for REITs and corporations. So much more, 30 years of experience, a proven executive possessing a unique mix of skills that have allowed him to be highly successful in the context of Fortune 100 companies and also in the cannabis industry. I'm here once again, welcoming back the CEO and co-founder of New Lake Capital Partners, Anthony Coniglio. Anthony, welcome back.
Well, thank you for having me back, and thank you for that extremely kind introduction.
My pleasure. So it's been about 6 months ago we talked and met each other in Miami for the first time, which was wonderful. And there's quite a few things that have come across that we can go back into today. But most importantly, issues when it comes to real estate, when it comes to what we're still waiting for and rescheduling for the DEA, when it comes to now the investment market and what it means now of the sudden change for the Federal Reserve Bank to go ahead and make interest rate cuts as opposed to raising interest rates they have had to do for the last couple of years because of inflationary issues. But first of all, let's get into part of real estate that for yourselves, New Lake Capital Partners, a leading provider in real estate capital to state licensed cannabis operators through sale leaseback transactions and third-party purchases. And your portfolio right now for New Lake is 32 properties, 15 cultivation facilities, and 17 dispensaries. And you just in the last quarter, as your second quarter results have detailed, you made the point that you have purchased a cannabis grow in Connecticut for $4 million, earmarked $12 million for improvements to the property, and also another $3.5 million on property improvements and other facilities in the portfolio. So again, $20 million there, and so much for improvements or for buying a new property. Can you give me what the lay of the land for the real estate market has been for you helping for other cannabis companies? And that's just not, you know, in Connecticut, but also Arizona, Missouri, Pennsylvania, for example. Give me the lay of the land, how it's been right now, the difficulties of trying to find attractive real estate.
Yeah, I'd say we go back in history and understand really what was the need that we were trying to satisfy with NewLake when we started the company over 5 years ago. It was the lack of access to capital for real estate for the industry, given the disconnect between state and federal law. Most property owners utilize leverage. They borrow on their properties in order to get enhanced returns. That leverage typically has in it, those loan agreements have in it provisions that prohibit the owner from renting out that property to somebody that's operating an illegal business. It's pretty standard, innocuous language until you enter stage right, the cannabis sector, where it is a federally illegal business. So it created the need for operators in the sector to acquire their own properties with their own capital. And then we step in and we provide non-dilutive capital to those operators by buying that property from them and leasing it on a long-term basis and providing capital to do a build to suit for land acquisition and a new build or retrofit of an existing property. And our leases are typically 15 to 20 year leases. So we have a long duration portfolio. So that's the backdrop. And our transactions early on were most of those purchasing buildings off of people's balance sheets. And what we've seen transition over the last couple of years has been to more of this retrofit of a property that's acquired or a build to suit. And so the deal we announced in Connecticut that you referenced was the acquisition of an old cold storage facility on behalf of C3 Industries, and we're providing them the capital to retrofit it to be a cannabis cultivation facility to supply the Connecticut adult use market. Likewise, in Arizona that you alluded to, that was a build to suit transaction for a ground up construction of 100,000 square foot cultivation facility for Mint Cannabis. And when we look at the landscape today, most of the transactions that we're seeing are around states that are either growing their medical program aggressively, which is fewer and fewer in this very moment, but more states that are turning on from medical to an adult use program. So we see opportunities in the pipeline, say around Ohio. There's some opportunities percolating around Florida in anticipation of the Amendment 3 getting passed in November. So today we're seeing that expansion capacity come also into the pipeline, maybe in Missouri, that we recently announced that we completed an expansion for C3 Industries at their Missouri cultivation facility. So given the continued disconnect between state and federal law and the need for operators to replicate their infrastructure on a state-by-state basis, there continues to be a need for real estate capital.
Now, the other thing too that I would imagine you're able to gain leverage from is because of the fact that, you know, there's a lot in total assets you have, a lot of cash in reserve, and a healthy credit line that you're in the driver's seat to be able to go ahead and look at properties right now and help companies go ahead and find those properties. Because for many other people, I guess in this environment, I mean, I can see what homeowners are going through when they see pricing going through the roof and it's not really crashing down. You know, is the market right now for real estate because of the high prices we see now on properties in general? Is this something where you're in a better position to go ahead and seek out properties because of what you have, because you were prepared for, you know, whatever kind of upside down environment we are right now in real estate?
Yeah, there are a few points I'd make there. Number one, I'd clarify, we don't purchase properties looking to entitle them and then trying to find a tenant for it. So that would be taking what I would call tenancy risk. What we do in our business today is we acquire properties that are currently tenanted, or in that case of the Connecticut transaction, we acquire the property and concurrently enter into a new lease with somebody. So we're not taking that tenancy risk. But your point about cost of capital is cost of capital for the industry has gotten significantly higher for a number of reasons. Higher rate environment, which I know we'll talk more about in a little bit, but also risk premium for the sector has been higher given some of the operating difficulties and the higher leverage that the industry as a whole has taken on. And so cost of capital is higher for the industry. For NewLake, what we tend to find is our cost of capital tends to be less than the industry. And the reason is that investors will more attractively price a diversified portfolio of professionally managed commercial real estate than they will an individual loan to an operator. And so for the right transactions, we seek to pass on that benefit of cost of capital. And we'll find that the cap rate, at which folks can enter into a sale leaseback in some cases is below what their long-term cost of capital is right now.
The other part too that you've emphasized the importance of combining innovative technology with strategic real estate investments to grow for growing demand of cannabis-related properties. So, what technology do you see out there that helps out to go ahead and assist on the investments you're looking for?
Yeah, I mean, so a lot of it is just old school underwriting in terms of evaluating the financials and evaluating the properties. But what we've done over the last 5 years is we've taken a lot of the institutional knowledge of board members and others that we've come in contact with related to not just the commercial real estate business, but importantly, the cannabis business. And we've developed a few proprietary tools that allow us to underwrite the credits in the industry and underwrite the properties to deliver what we think is best in class portfolio performance. And we all know we've seen defaults and issues across the industry, and we think that that underwriting approach has served us well. And when you have somebody like a Pete Cadence who is on our board and has been with us from the very early days of our business. He was one of the co-founders over at GTI and ran the company as CEO until took the company public and retired. And now Ben's running the business. They were always running it together. But when you have someone like that who's there on the ground floor and took that company to scale and took it public, he really understands the nature of the business, the financial statements, the buildings, the equipment, the states, the rules, the regulations. And when you start to institutionalize that knowledge, it allows you to make a more informed decision about the tenants that you're looking to put in the business. And so we've always said that we're not just about looking to grow. We're not going to grow for growth's sake. We want to have quality growth. And creating this proprietary underwriting approach and some of these proprietary models, again, we think has served us and our investors well.
Sure, we did definitely talked to Bazinga about the fact of the ongoing finalizing of the DEA's decision to go ahead and reschedule cannabis from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3. And in a statement that you made, in a statement back in May, you made a point about, and this was really signal above the noise. We estimate our tenants, quote, would collectively enjoy more than $400 million of annual tax savings and related increase the cash flows for their businesses because of the 280E regulations being waived because finally rescheduling will allow that to happen. And that this would be a catalyst for incremental investment into the sector, which we believe will allow operators to recapitalize their balance sheets, resulting in further improvement of the industry's credit quality, including our tenant base. So again, $400 million, so much that could be brought back in and reinvested. And that's the thing I'm always been asking companies, you know, if you have that 10 to 15% that you could write off once again on taxes. And I mean, I say to reinvest, what do you say?
Yeah, well, you know, all of what you said continues to be accurate in my view, except for one thing. We've upped the estimate. We now think it's closer to $500 million
Wow.
savings across the tenant sector. Now, what's interesting about that is how does that translate over time? Because many of the operators aren't paying their current year federal tax obligation anyway. So it's not an immediate impact on cash flow. It's not as if this passes and you're immediately going to see that cash in the coffers. But what it does do is it improves the net present value of the future cash flows of that business, which makes it a more attractive business to investors at a better valuation and would allow perhaps operators to raise capital on the back of that improved valuation and recapitalize the balance sheet. And so I do think that that theory still is intact. I think the debate that's going to rage once it does pass, and once the final, not pass, but once the final rule is implemented, and I believe it will be in 2025, I think the debate that will rage is how much of those savings will go into bottom line adjustment, i.e., passing it on to the customer. And so some people may decide to pass it on to the customer and watch prices go down and try to grab more market share from the illicit market. But I think, I hope, and I'm encouraging my colleagues that run the companies to utilize that improved cash flow for improved balance sheet performance to be able to handle the significant debt maturities that are occurring in 26 and beyond, and also attract new investors with that improved balance sheet profile. I think that'll bode well long-term for the industry. And once we have that improved financial performance, then I think the industry should start looking at price competition as a way to continue to scale their business. I'd advise against going directly to price competition because, you know, then it could become a chase to the bottom and you didn't have the opportunity to repair the balance sheet and handle what could happen with increased price competition.
I'm just surprised, really, that the DA, while they closed out and then the decision was made, but we haven't had the finalization and we're coming up on 6 months now. And I would have hoped that, you know, taking advantage of that 280E distinction being taken away, they'll be able to go and file taxes for 2025 and start being able to go and use that. I mean, I already know that companies have tried to go ahead and start trying to recoup from previous years. We've had people that have tried to challenge the IRS for that. But it's unfortunate it's going to have to wait another year. So for anybody to get the chance to take advantage of that reinvestment, they have to wait till 2026 to even go and see the reap the benefits of that, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think that's accurate because it's in statute, and if and when we get the rescheduling 2-3, that's when that 280E would just no longer apply by statute. And I think the IRS has been pretty clear that their view is that 280E is in full effect until the date that that passes, and they intend to collect. And I know some people are challenging 280E, and I wish them all the best, and we hope that that they're successful, because their success bodes well for the industry. We don't underwrite expecting that that cut in taxes, because we'd rather have it as an upside rather than be misunderwrite and expect it to happen and it doesn't occur.
I'm here with Anthony Coniglio, CEO and co-founder of New Lake Capital Partners. And when we come back, we'll go ahead and talk more, especially off the top of the show. You mentioned about higher rates, but now we're starting to see a change right now for the Federal Reserve deciding to go and make a 50-point rate cut to interest rates. We're going to talk about that and also some of the areas in terms of stocks and capital. We're going to talk more with Anthony here on Blunt Business after a short break.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
Welcome back to Blunt Business, again presented and powered by the Buzz CRM.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Fits all plan, all-inclusive pricing plan designed to cater to small, medium, and large businesses, providing value and flexibility for growing companies looking to scale their marketing efforts while saving them dollars on marketing subscriptions. With The Buzz, you only need one platform. Go ahead and get yourself a free trial right now, thebuzzcrm.com. So again, I'm here with Anthony Coniglio, CEO and co-founder of New Lake Capital Partners. And Anthony, I want to go ahead and now move on into what your team has talked about when it comes to the Federal Reserve Bank. And it was surprising there were quite a few people that were vocal about the 50 basis point change right now. And it was surprising to your team, as you may mention in a statement that I'll read this here. Surprise to us, the Fed has lowered rates by 50 basis points to get ahead of potential weakness in our economy in the coming months. It's great to see central bankers firmly moving into an easing of monetary policy. We're more optimistic about economic growth in the near term, but the initial rate cut will have limited impact on operator financial performance because many credit facilities are fixed rate. For those with floating rates, a 50 basis point or 0.5% only reduces expense by 4% if a company's floating rate coupon is currently 12%. When this easing cycle can easily have an impact on the industry is a return to more risk on appetite for investors generally, and the potential for that to bring in new investors to the sector. So further rate cuts will position operators to reduce borrowing costs more meaningfully when refinancings occur over the next 12 to 24 months. So, I mean, I felt like it's a bit premature to go ahead and start making cuts now, because I don't think they have, I mean, even could try to show whatever you want on paper that they're starting to go ahead and have a hold on inflation. But I don't know if it's been so much of that. And I just don't know if there was a need for a cut. I don't think there was a need for a raise yet, but I don't know if there was a need for a cut right now. What, you know, in your perspective, go ahead and expand on what you were saying right there in that statement. Your team.
Yeah. So again, my caveat is I am no economist. I didn't even play one on TV.
Right.
I pay attention to what the Fed says, and they clearly, as they've said, they've pivoted from inflation focus to employment focus, and some of the revisions to the employment picture have shaken, I think, a little bit of their foundation around job growth. And there's this concept of the neutral rate. And right now, the way the Fed measures that neutral rate is they look at their short-term rates today and they believe that they are in what's called restrictive territory, that they're constraining the economy. And so they want to reduce the short-term rates to get to more of a neutral where their rate policy isn't impacting the economy one way or the other. And they want to pull back on that restrictiveness before it really impacts ultimately employment. That's the big picture of what's going on. I thought they would have gone a little bit slower and given some of the strength that we're seeing in the employment numbers, that they would have gone 25 and then watch what happens as we move through the fall. But listen, they make their jobs out of this. So they surprised us 50 basis points impact. And as you pointed out, it's not going to have a material impact, particularly on the public companies in the sector,
right?
Because most of them right now have fixed rate debt.
And the other thing too is that, and I like to stay apolitical as much as possible, but I can't go without thinking that there is a bit of a political motivation, even though the Federal Reserve is a separate entity. I can imagine there was a lot of, positioning of saying, look, we're at a presidential election. The current administration wants to go and have a win after seeing inflation being so, has been such an issue going on, and that there's a final turnaround right before the election comes up. Do you see any of that playing in this?
Maybe there's an undertone of that, but again, the Fed tells you that they're looking at the data. So if you just look at the data supports it. The inflation data continues to come down, continues to be on this quote unquote glide path to their target of 2%. So it supported the notion that clearly they didn't need to increase, and clearly they had the opportunity to pull back. There was some weakness in the employment data that was revised. And so you can make the argument for it. Listen, if you wanted to have a political undertone to it, I'm sure you could, make the argument.
Yeah.
But my view is the data supported a move and starting to ease. And the important factor here to me is also the slope of the yield curve, because since they lowered rates, you actually saw the long end of the yield curve go up. And what that means is we're getting back to a more normalized yield curve where short-term rates are lower than long-term rates, and it's that steepness of the yield curve or the difference between the long rates and the short rates. And I think that's part of what the Fed wants us to get us back to, which is a normalized yield curve. And I don't think they think you're going to do it all in the long end, because they can't control the long end. The only place they could set rates is the short end. And so by bringing down that short end, they not only get to neutral, but they also assist in steepening that yield curve.
Let's come along into the venture capital. So there's been recent investment developments in cannabis investment reflecting both challenges and opportunities. Venture capital has slowed down significantly, due to rising interest rates, which hopefully now, as we talk about this rate change, will go and make a different turn. And compared to more optimistic outlooks in 2021, cannabis investors have become more cautious. So in that sense, because of this rate change, do you feel like venture capital, will people make that? Will there be more investment in venture capital? Do you feel like that's going to make this was enough to make a turnaround?
Yeah, I make the statement a bit more broadly than just venture capitalists. I think in a lower rate environment, you tend to see a more what's called risk on mentality. And as that cost of capital becomes lower for the investor universe, they're willing to take on more risk to be able to get return, because the alternative to staying in bonds and getting a low yield isn't as attractive anymore. So in a general risk on environment, whether it's debt investors, equity investors, private equity firms, venture capitalists, across that capital ecosystem, generally speaking, we should see an increased level of risk appetite. And that's going to benefit this industry, because you're going to see when the industry goes to refinance, they'll not only benefit from a lower risk-free rate, which is where we start in pricing borrowings, loans, bonds, but they should also benefit from a lower risk premium, which means these companies hopefully are better credit risks when they're looking to refinance their 26 obligations next year in 2025. And then hopefully with this risk on appetite, you'll have more investors showing up to invest in that debt or purchase that debt, which could drive down the yields even a little bit further. And so it gets us into this positive feedback loop of improved credit performance, greater demand for those securities, which improves the cost of capital for the industry.
And I'm taking that from an Alpha Root study that really talked about cannabis venture capital in 2024. And one of the other things they also made mention of is about that capital raised through equity deals dropped by 75% between 2022 and 2023. Larger deals over $100 million becoming especially rare. And despite this, companies continue to seek alternative funding strategies, crowdfunding, allowing public participation with lower entry barriers. And now the interest rate cut has come into play. So the other part is, you know, the amount of money is being invested.
Yes. And so there are a couple of things at play there. I think when you look at that time period where the industry was digesting the overbuilding that occurred in 2022 mm-hmm. from the significant capital that was raised in 2021. So we had this mania in 2021, people thinking that the industry was going to the moon. Lots of capital was raised at very high valuations that was used to expand footprints, to grow capacity across all the different states. And then in 2022, we started to see that capacity come online. In 2022 into 2023, we all know the financial performance suffered as pricing plummeted across the country. And so I think that was part of it. The other part that's at play here too is custody, right? We can't have a conversation around investor demand without talking about the ability for institutional investors to custody the assets, whether it be debt or equity securities. And that has a real chilling effect on demand for securities in the sector when the typical institutional investor can't participate because of these structural impediments.
We're going to come back after a short break, and I want to ask you about the stock market and just where things are. I haven't talked much about it, but I figured you would be one of the best folks to go ahead and address. I'm here again with Anthony Coniglio, CEO and co-founder of New Lake Capital Partners here on Blunt Business. Back with final questions after a short break.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
We're in the home stretch. I'm here on Blunt Business with Anthony Coniglio, CEO and co-founder of New Lake Capital Partners. And for those who want to go ahead and learn more about what you do at New Lake Capital, the website is newlake.com, and you can find more information. We'll ask you about that in just a second. But before we go into that, just want to go look into what the stock market is experiencing right now as a whole. That, you know, multi-state operators are continuing to dominate right now in the stock market. Companies are showing stable growth, and some green thumb industries, for example, 11% year-over-year revenue increase. Curaleaf is expanding to the European market. Cannabis focus ETFs like the Advisor Shares Pure U.S. Cannabis ETF has increased in value, offering investors a selective approach to cannabis companies. And while investment might have declined, there's projections for long-term growth in the industry remaining strong. When you look at where, is there anything where you feel like right now is a good time to go ahead and dabble into the market right now, that the cannabis is a good buy?
Yeah, well, I think in looking at any equity investment, investors really should be understanding the balance sheet and understanding the debt load on some of these companies. We have seen over the past couple of years, as companies have needed to refinance debt, that in order to induce the lenders to extend the maturity, they've had to provide warrants, and that's dilution for the equity holder. And so you may be looking at a stock that seems really attractive. Maybe it's in a state like Ohio that's growing now that it's gone adult use. Maybe they have a large concentration in Florida, but they may have significant debt on the balance sheet. And so it's important, I think, to understand the debt load and the potential dilution that will come from an equity raise. I do firmly believe more broadly that this industry is in a long-term growth trend. It may not be putting up the growth numbers for 2024 that everybody wants to see. Everybody would love to see 10 to 20% annual growth. I think what's going under the surface there is a little bit of this competitive environment with the intoxicating hemp market and the proliferation of those products. It'll be interesting to watch in 2025 as I believe that industry becomes more regulated. And in some states, we see them ban it, such as they've done in California and New Jersey recently. And so that's pulling some of the growth away from the regulated industry. And then I think we're going to see this acceleration over the next 2 years of states that are medical today converting to adult use, like we saw with Ohio earlier this year, and as we see on the ballot in Florida. But you're also going to see, I think, very populous states that might have a very nascent program, nascent medical program, like a Georgia, for example, very, very small medical program. I think you're going to see these states start to expand those programs, particularly as we move to Schedule III. I think that'll be an impetus for this. And that's going to provide some additional growth opportunity, not to mention, gosh, if you ever get Texas going in terms of the scale of that state, getting a real medical program there. And so there's some real growth on the horizon for the industry. I think investors just have to be ready for the illiquidity of being in some of these equities and the potential for dilution, but you could get some terrific returns.
Fantastic. Let's go ahead and send people to the website and tell that people can continue to follow along with your story as an industry-leading real estate portfolio and a high-growth industry of cannabis. 14 partnerships with top cannabis operators across the country. Website is newlake.com. And if you can, just take a minute to go and talk to our listeners about going to the website and what they should be doing. Who should go and continue to reach out to you and your team to learn more and to possibly work with you?
Yeah, well, again, thank you for having me. And
Of
if
course.
folks want to learn about us, they could absolutely go to newlake.com. What's also interesting on our investor page is where to buy our stock. So lots of times we have conversations with folks where they say, I love it, I get it, but how can I buy it given some of these restrictions? So we actually list a number of the broker-dealers that we know permit trading in NewLake securities, and we'll custody them. Also, we're pretty active on X these days, so you could follow NewLake on X. I'm also pretty active at Anthony Coniglio O, but my O is a zero on X, and we try to stay in constant communication. And we're always participating in conferences around investors, and we put out a press release today that we'll be attending the Benzinga conference in Chicago next
Yes.
week, as well as LD Micro in Los Angeles later this month. And so if you're at any of these conferences and want to connect with us, please do so, or just go to our investor page and connect with us there.
It's too bad we're going to be able to be in Chicago. And unfortunately, this episode will be running just after that. But, either which way, I know people will get a chance to go meet with you in conferences down the line. And obviously, you can meet you on the website. Also, I should make mention, if I hadn't mentioned this earlier, because how long has it been since I had a publicly traded company on the program? But yes, OTC Markets, you can find NewLake Capital Partners under the ticker symbol NLCP, NLCP, and take a look at that right now. And we'll leave it there. Again, Anthony Coniglio, CEO, co-founder, NewLake Capital Partners, NewLake Capital Partners. Thank you for being on with us. Really appreciate you taking time out.
Thanks so much. Appreciate the discussion.
Absolutely. And thank you, listeners, for listening to another Blunt Business. We'll talk to you next time.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.